Welcome to I'm So Obsessed, where we talk with actors, artists, and creators about their work, career, and current obsession. I'm your host, Patrick Holland, and today my guest is the stand-up and Emmy-nominated writer, Sam Jay. You might know her best from her 2020 Netflix special, 3 in the Morning, or for her work as a writer on Saturday Night Live. Sam is the writer and host of Pause with Sam Jay on HBO Max, which just had its season 2 premiere. The show follows Sam as she explores a variety of topics through a series of chats with her friends, as well as sketches and interviews. There's no other show like this on TV. Take a listen to part of the trailer for season 2.
Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Samaria Johnson.
I didn't really come out. Like, when I hear young people talking about, I gathered everybody in the living room.
Excuse me, I have something to say.
Y'all calling me crazy when a bitch been piling all day like crazy.
I asked the hard question.
Do you think I'm an alcoholic? If I only freeze my head, is it like cheaper?
It is cheaper.
It's a broke people thing to only freeze your head.
That's right.
Sam, I really didn't know much about you, and I saw a trailer for Pause. I was like, what is the show? And then I've watched the episodes over the weekend, and I'm like just blown away by the show. I'm blown away by you, and I have a feeling the two are just kind of interwoven. And I'm just wondering, just to start off for Pause, for people who have not seen the show, how do you describe it?
I usually tell people to just watch it because it is a little hard to explain, but it's like if you could watch a hang with your friends and then go out in the world with network money and prove your point.
And I think the thing that I was so surprised is the format. It's just absolutely appealing. It's basically every episode you have you and a group of friends. There's a sense of like a party atmosphere, but you're also discussing and debating and arguing and joking about issues. And the point is, you're not necessarily out to settle an issue. It's just kind of the act of talking about it. How did you end up knowing you want to talk about a topic? How do you pick the topics? I have so many questions.
Well, this season we did it a little different, and we did the interviews first and the parties last. Last season we did it in the reverse, I think. We did the parties and then the interviews. So to be honest with you, I think we're still finding our way with that and like what actually works.
Well, and I wonder too, as someone, I mean, you are sewn throughout this. It's your name on the show. You co-created it. You're in the show. It's your friends. It's your partner. How do you separate you from the show? Or is there any separation at this point between you and the show?
I would say no, but not in a bad way. You know what I mean? Like, I still have like, my own, I have opinions I haven't shared on the show. I have thoughts I haven't shared on the show. So I still have some things to myself, but I mean, it is what I think and it is my real friends and sometimes my family. And, you know, it is really grounded in my actual life.
And have you always been someone who's just been, this is who I am and let's just get past that and get talking? Or is it something that you've kind of grown into throughout your life?
I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I think I had hints of it, you know, but I didn't really understand myself fully. And you still got to grow into a person. I had to like figure out who I was sexually, figure out like my sexual identity and figure out like just how I wanted to be in the world. I think everybody kind of struggles with that, you know, just figuring out what kind of person you want to be and had to double back on some things in life. And then I kind of landed at a, you know, it is what it is space, but it took a while.
Well, and something that's a common theme on the show is the idea of labels. And in one sense, you're embracing a label of who you are as a person or all the labels each of us has. And then there's like the actual like labels in the show, which are kind of funny, like the little lower thirds you guys have. But then there's also by embracing the label or even stereotypes, you're also breaking it down so you can kind of address those without trying to correct them, if that makes sense. I wonder like how much if that comes from, is that something you're trying to like lead in the show as you're having these talks? Or is it literally just what we're seeing with you and your friends are these just intimate conversations? And if someone, you know, has a different opinion, that's just it. And you're not trying to correct it.
When we were building the show and we were kind of thinking about a show philosophy, that was one of the philosophies of the show was just like, yo, we're not out here to shame you for your opinion or tell you your opinion is incorrect. We're just out here to kind of see what opinions are out there and try to start the conversation, not finish it. Because I think most of the things that we approach, I don't know. I don't have the answer. I don't know what the answer is. I'm still out here figuring it out, and I'm not always correct. So it just seemed a little like presumptuous and arrogant to try to be like, this is how you got to do it, you know, because it's like there is no one way to, you know, skin a cat, as the saying goes.
Yeah. And, you know, I've not skinned a cat, but I don't think I'd want to do that either. But watching your shows, it's fun because there are parts where I'm like, man, just kind of like when I have friends in a party or we're going for drink, we're having conversations like that kind of depth. And there's that respect for like disagreement. But then another sense, this is unlike anything I've watched. I'm laughing, I'm learning, I'm in awe. And it's this kind of getting to be a fly on the wall, I think, appeal for me that I just love it. And I think what comes out of that is just like a sense of empathy. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that and how important empathy is to you, and especially the interviews you do in the show.
It's super important, I guess. I mean, you know, like out in the actual world is just meeting people and hearing their stories. And even if I don't agree with their stories, kind of getting a sense of their lives and kind of how they ended up where they are, or thinking how they think, you know. And I think there's always a stuff behind, for lack of a better word. I don't believe things spring out of nowhere. I believe everything has a history and a tale to it. When we were thinking about the show, that was just something that we wanted to explore, because I just wasn't seeing a lot of that in late night conversation. It seemed to be very political and very line in the sand and very like, these people are wrong and these people are correct. And those people can change depending on what channel and what show you're watching. But there was just really no conversation that was kind of like, we're all a f-ing mess. And how do we kind of navigate that in a true sense? And how do people get to whatever we perceive to be wrong? And how do people get to whatever we perceive to be right?
And what I think shocks me too is all this is done in person. You know, you're not, there's an element of the internet, which I think people praise for, like, hey, it's everything, all the books in the world, everything's right there. You could find someone who believes the same things you do. But also that's caused a ton of like toxic and horrible things to happen. And I'm wondering if that fact that your show is, you're literally looking someone in the eye having those conversations, does that change that dynamic? Does that remove that toxic part of that we find on the internet?
I think so. At least I hope it does. And I hope, like, you know, even for me, by looking at these people and having real conversations with people that are actually experiencing these things or have lived experience, it forces me too to like kind of like see the humanity in everybody, or at least try to.
I think with season one, you have an episode where you're like interviewing like Black conservatives. And one of them through the course of the interview, she basically publicly comes out, and the reaction you have is not only shock, but there's just the sense of like being careful with that. And I wonder if you could tell me a little bit what was going through your mind when that moment happened.
I just felt like, oh my God, she's so young and this is probably so scary. You know, it seemed like the first time she was really saying it. So I was shocked, but also just, you know, being a queer woman, I just thought just about how scary it probably was for her. And I just didn't want her to feel alone in that moment or on the spot.
I don't know if you could expect something like that from any show, but it was, that's what I think it was so appealing about your show too, is the, I'm laughing and kind of joking with you or hearing you talk about things. And then in another sense is this like this sense of appeal of humanity. You mentioned talking about like wanting to create the show to be like something we don't see in a normal talk show. And I know one of the creators with you is Prentice Penny. He's been on this podcast before. I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about what that relationship between the two of you is like and how that process was to develop Pause.
I mean, Prentice is really good at like his job of finding and developing and honing talent. And so it was just a lot of talking at first. Like we would just have Zoom meetings because it was the pandemic. So the first time we actually met in person was probably 7-8 months into the process, but we would sit on Zoom and he would just ask me what I thought about, what I'm thinking about, or something would happen in the news, and he'd be like, hey, you saw that, what do you think about it? And he would always say to me, like, the show should just feel like a fine tailored suit, and it should just fit you. And if it doesn't fit you, then it's not gonna work. So let's find the format that's gonna work for you. He's really great at supporting a vision and bringing his own energy to it to just like round it out.
So the name of our podcast, Sam, is I'm So Obsessed. What are you currently obsessed with?
I don't know. It's weird because I have a little money now, so I get into these little holes with things. Like, I was buying a bunch of old anime at one point that I remember watching young and I hadn't seen in a while, and like comic books I had that got lost and destroyed. I was doing that for a little second and that felt a little obsessive. Sneakers, I'm always buying sneakers. That feels so typical and basic. I would love to have something more interesting, but I don't think I do.
Well, it also sounds like, at least with the anime and the comic books, it's like it's something that was part of you growing up that you're kind of reconnecting with, right?
Yeah, sneakers are the same thing. And like, I'm really into like trying to get my feet together. Like, I got a corn and I'm determined to get rid of it. I bought all this foot stuff. I got a lot of foot care stuff.
Oh, you got like a corn on your foot. I got you now. I got you.
Yeah, I got a corn on my foot and I'm like, I've had it for years and I'm like, I'm done with this. I'm getting rid of this corn. And I bought all this like corn removal stuff and like a foot mask. And I got some Grecian like heel foot treatment. So that might be the thing right now, is trying to get my feet sexy.
I can have a parallel journey with you. I don't have corns, but yeah, in the past couple of years, it's like,
lucky you.
Lucky me. But I say it's like, I feel like I have very look caveman looking, like the feet, like those guys in like Lord of the Rings have, like the hobbits.
Oh, hobbit feet. You got hobbit feet.
I don't, but I felt like I was going there. I'm like, dude, you gotta take care. I never had gotten like a pedicure. Yeah, and when I went in, I was like, wait, this is what a pedicure is? This is amazing. Like, they clean it all up and you get massage. And look, I was like, this is fantastic. And you're like, how much is that? Okay.
I just watched Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring. Well, my girl, we watched the whole thing, but she had never seen any of them. And she was very stressed out about the hobbit feet. It was a big concern for her. Like, mid-movie, she was like, are they ever going to get shoes? And I was like, no, babe, they do the whole thing without shoes. She was like, why? She couldn't handle it. The lack of shoes really bothered her.
I love that. And it's honestly, it's a very sensible reaction. You're like,
yeah, no, she was really concerned. You know, the scene when they're on the mountain, the snowy mountain, she was like, they still don't have shoes. And I was like, yeah. You're really stressed about this.
So funny. And over the weekend, I started watching this George Carlin documentary, and you popped up in it, and you talk about him being a critical thinker. And part of the documentary, I've learned was that how much he reinvented himself or recommitted to being more himself on stage. How do you find that balance with the material you do as a stand-up, material you do as a writer, and what you're doing now with Pause?
It's all just an extension of stand up to me. It's a lot of the things you see in Pause are things I touch on stage, you know? And it's like, well, now Pause is this opportunity to really take a little blip of a thought that I can get off on stage and open it up and dissect it and bring other people and opinions and ideas into it. And so to me, it's like all an extension.
I'm guessing with pandemic stuff, in a weird, like, things are opening up and all that again. Are you doing stand-up again? Are you planning to do more stand-up now that more people know you from Pause? Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always doing stand-up. You know, I live in New York, so it's one of the greatest stand-up cities in the world. So I get up at the Stand, the Cellar, and, you know, Cubs around the city all the time. But I am back in the mode of, like, building a new hour and, like, doing, yeah, I'm going to do a second special for sure.
I know you also were a writer on Saturday Night Live, and that is a completely different show for 1,000 reasons. what's your writer's room like? What is that vibe like? What are the, who are the people in this writer's room? And ultimately, what are you taking out of those moments in the writer's room that go into the show?
Who's in the writer's room? It's Jack Knight, Langston Kerman, Zach Fox, Emmy Blotnick, Megan Kelly, Joelle Nicole. Like, we, Johnson, we have like a mix, Teresa Lowe, Lorena, Lucy. So it's like a mix. It's a mix of straight people. It's a mix of gay people, queer people, women, men, white people, black people, Asian people. Like, we try to get a good mix of like a conversation, honestly, and get a good amount of perspective. That's a big deal for us in the writer's room, is just bringing in perspectives. And kind of even how you get hired is just, I have a conversation with you and I'm like, all right, this person's willing to talk and yell at me, so they'll probably be good in figuring out how we're gonna like make this gumbo. And then honestly, it's just, we just go in on a topic and start talking, and we start to get the perspectives, and then we try to narrow down my actual perspective, and then how do we build the house around that perspective is kind of how we build it.
And going back to like the party thing, I think I love it, because I'm like, God, it must be so much fun to be there. But you're also like, well, they're filming, so I'm sure like the people off camera are like trying to be quiet or whatever a little bit. But then you're like, not really. I can kind of hear things like popping out around them. What is it like to film those? Is that your actual place? And now do you have friends like, hey, I want to be in season two? Do you have people hitting you up to like be a part of this party?
I mean, no, it's not my place, because I'm not crazy. I would never have a film crew in my house. Quite destructive. So no, but it is a real apartment, and that was really important to me, that it wasn't a set. I didn't want people walking into a set. I wanted people to walk into a home, and we try to make it my home as much as possible. There's real pictures of me and my girl up all around, and like it feels like what my house would feel like. And I'm always there before the guests to greet them when they come up the stairs, and a studio is gonna take them out of it, and then they're gonna feel like they have to be performative because they're in a studio. There's just the way a studio's set up. There's no way to kind of be your natural self. And also, you know, I demanded that there was no like boom mics, which was a big fight with sound. Bless the sound team, because I know it was very frustrating. But everyone's labs, so there's like 14 channels. Because I just felt like if you have booms in people's faces, and they're going to be super conscious of what they're saying, and like, it's not going to be like a genuine conversation.
I say the sound people deserve like a raise despite hearing that set up.
Yeah, no, that's terrible. And we're like screaming, you know, it's like people yelling at the top of their lungs drunk.
I'd say, please take this the right way. I think that just talking to you, it's like, I was so used, and I don't mean screaming in a bad way. It's just you're at a party. It's how people talk. But having watched the episodes, like, oh, wow, she's very quiet. Like, she talks normally.
I do sometimes.
I do sometimes. And normally is not even the right word. Just, you know what I'm saying. I hope you know what you're saying.
At a reasonable octave. Yes.
You're not yelling in my apartment. Okay, so I saw season two, episode one, The Naked Basketball Game. I gotta talk about The Naked Basketball Game. It's brilliant. It's funny. It's just,
the mascot is right there.
Oh, the mascot. Yeah. And I wonder if you could talk about how it was filming that, and if it was nearly as fun as it looked on screen.
It was. I mean, we just really threw a basketball game, and I was like, well, it should just be a real basketball game, and it should feel it. It was one. We got a gym. We brought in people. We had a game. I think people thought they were going to be thrown off by being naked way more than they were. I think people were thought in the audience they were going to be thrown off by seeing it. And it just became a game. And they wanted to win. You know what I mean? And so, like, that was my favorite part, is when they got free and we're like, it doesn't matter. We're all naked. I'm snatching the ball, or I'm diving on the ground, or I'm going to like really try to win this game. My team was really bummed. We were bummed that we lost. We were truly like, this is crazy, because we were ahead by so much. And then I was talking to them on the bench, and they were like, we wanted to try to get some get back and play again. But, you know, time wasn't permitting. But I think no one even cared at that point about being naked. They were just kind of pissed they lost.
Yeah, I mean, I was getting, that's the thing, you get into the game, you're like, oh, we're ahead. Oh, shit, we're behind now. And And you, the way Ian, the winning coach, had the trophy was fantastic. And that all came out from a conversation in the episode, at least from the party, about Jamie Foxx hosting Naked Basketball, which I had never heard of. And I was like, I had never played Naked Basketball. It's like, that looks like it could be kind of fun.
I don't know that it's true. Really, the conversation was more like about rumors and how Black men in Hollywood are constantly dealing with these rumors that they're doing secret gay stuff. And why is that? And why, even if he is having Naked Basketball games in the Hills, which I have no idea if he is or isn't, it is strictly a rumor. I've never met the man nor been to his house. But my point was, even if he is, why does it have to be gay per se? And why does it have to be bad per se? And maybe it's just about freedom. And that's why I say that line in the party of like, we let white people and explore sex so much and explore sexual identity and gender so much. And white boys can play little silly games and put their balls on each other's forehead and have a laugh. And no one's like, oh, look at that room full of gay dudes. But when Black men have any like kind of expression in that way, it's like, what's going on with that dude? And so it was it just an attempt to really take the stigma and the stink off of it and kind of tell people to get out their own way and that there can be this intersectionality of niggerness and queerness and beautiful Blackness all existing in one space. And you don't have to necessarily determine what any of it is. It could all just be Black and beautiful.
I want to go back, and when you were, before you were filming the very first episode of season one, if you could go back in time and give yourself advice, what would it be?
Be less afraid. Yeah, be less afraid.
What were you afraid of?
It absolutely not working. I never seen it before. And I pitched it like I knew I could do it, but I didn't know. So I was just like, I don't know if this is going to work out with me. Show when we get it all back, you know.
And when you saw that first episode coming together, did it like alleviate some of those fears?
Yeah. Once we were doing it, I was in the party, I could feel it, and I was like, oh, I know where we can get the show from this, what we're doing. I see how we can put a show together.
I want to wrap up our conversation. We do a thing on our show called Pick One. I give you a couple of things to choose. You select one. It doesn't mean the thing you select is better than the other thing. So can we play Pick One, Sam?
Of course.
Okay, pick one. Boston, New York, or Atlanta?
Dang. I want to say Boston just to be loyal, but that would be honest because I don't want to be there. I have to say New York.
Well, I mean, that's where you live now, so that makes sense. Pick one, writing or performing?
It's kind of impossible. But if I had to do something, that's hard. That's really hard because sometimes I hate performing. Because sometimes I hate writing.
Well, can I ask you this? Like, as a stand-up, are you like someone are you scripting stuff out before? Or you just have an idea of where you want to go with stuff? Like, how do you?
I have an idea and then I like refine it on stage. And then once I feel like I'm like figuring it out, I'll watch tape. A little bit. I kind of hate it. So I watch tape, not like obsessively, but a little bit. If there's a way I told a joke and I really want to, it really worked, I'll watch it. Just like, what was the pacing and whatever the hell. And I think you can get worn out either way. Like right now I'm itching to go back to stand up. I've been in TV writing in like, I don't know, 7 years.
Oh, wow.
I miss just doing stand up. I'm not going to lie. I miss when I was just a wild stand-up. It feels like I got some like training now, and I miss when I was just running free and getting up every night and going city to city and just writing jokes the day of and running to the club to get them out. But I know I'll get annoyed with that eventually, because I did, and I'll be like, I'm f-ing over the road and I don't want to talk to anybody, you know what I mean? And I want to just like go in a hole and not have to do all that interacting. So that's tough. But I guess if I had to live or die on something, it would be performing.
This is probably the most important one. And actually, I know we didn't plan this, but you happen to be wearing one right now. And I as well. Pick one, cardigans or hoodies. And I want to just preface this by saying, in the show, you have the most amazing sweaters. And I'm a sweater guy. And I'm like, dear God, these sweaters are amazing. So cardigans or hoodies?
I love cardigans. I do. I love a good cardigan. Always have. But probably because I went to a Catholic school. But hoodies.
And you say that wearing your shoes, wearing a hoodie for those listening right now.
I'm always either wearing a hoodie or a cardigan. Usually hoodies are my thing. I think they're just, you know, universal. And you can dress them up, dress them down. Love a good hoodie.
Sam, thanks for taking time. And it was so nice meeting you and such a big fan. And I can't wait to see more of your work.
Thank you, bro.
I want to thank Sam for chatting with me. And I want to thank you for listening. New episodes of Pause with Sam J air Fridays on HBO and HBO Max. I'm So Obsessed was created by our executive producer, Danielle Ramirez. Our editor and lead producer is Sophia Fox-Sowell. And this episode was produced by Rebecca Fleener. Please take a moment and subscribe to I'm So Obsessed on your favorite podcast app. Follow the show on Twitter at I'm So Obsessed Pod. And until next time, take care.